to me, enough is enough. They just wanna hurt us. Bring us down. Bring us down. Enough is enough. We won't let them hurt us. Bring us down. Bring us
back to the Indie Wrestling Corner with another episode of Under the Ropes. I'm your host, as always, the queen of the indies, Tiffany. And today I got my good friend Johnny Torres. How are ya?
Doing well, Tiffany. Good to be on the show. Thank you for having me.
Yes, I'm so excited. So thanks for coming on here. So, but
my pleasure.
It's great because I was thinking about it. And I was like, I don't think I've had like a lot of people that come on here that's done commentary before. So I feel like this is going to be very like different kind of interview. So I'm kind of like really excited for that. So yeah. So,
awesome.
So guys, if you're new here to the Under the Rope series, here I interview everything independent wrestling, whether it's wrestlers, promoters, referees, commentary, backstage. Everybody, so I got you covered. If you guys got questions, please feel free, drop it into the chat. I'm sure Johnny will be more than happy to answer all of your questions. Please like, hit that share, you know, hit the subscribe button, turn that bell on so you know when all the interviews are coming on here too. So, and all those audio listeners too. So I appreciate you. So, oh, it's Happy Galentine's Day. I'm doing pink. I was like, you know. Galentine's Day for the friends out there. You know, tomorrow I'm just going to cry. But I'm kidding. All right. Let's go back to basics with you a little bit. So then I'll say hi to whoever's in the chat. So let's start from the beginning. Let's learn a little bit about you, how you got into wrestling, you know, some of your favorites.
So getting into wrestling for me was, as a kid, was a complete accident. I was riding with my dad to the appliance store at the end of 1996, and a guy was leaving and he saw that my dad was with his two kids here. And he's like, hey, I got tickets for the upcoming WWF house show and the Hartford Civic Center. Do you want to like, do you want them? I can't go. I have a conflict. Just take them. So my dad got these three tickets to the Holiday Hell Tour in 1996. So December 29th, 1996, because I looked this date up earlier because I know this question comes up about where it all began. So December 29th, 1996, I got the card right here for you. But main event was WWF World Champion Psycho Sid defeated Mankind in the main event. But it kind of all started from there. And then for actual independent wrestling fandom, that was like 2002, 2003. WWF had started doing a lot more like high flying, longer matches with faster pace to them. And I was really gravitating towards that style, started traveling back and watching like WCW at the height of the Cruiserweight era, 97 era whereabouts. And then started hearing about a thing called Ring of Honor circa 2003, 2004 around then. Had a hard time getting my hands on some until I heard that they were bringing Jushin Thunder Liger to Boston in November of 2004, Weekend of Thunder Night 1. And that was where it all began for both the indies and Japanese wrestling for me, was was with Ring of Honor in 2004, and it all took off from there. That was my first taste of ever getting to help, you know, carry guardrails or put a ring together or flyer, anything like that. It all started in a way with Ring of Honor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, that's so crazy. So crazy. And here we are.
Right? Yeah, all indies ever since, you know?
Yeah, that's why, like, Queen of the Indies. I love the independent scene. It's so much different, right, than, like, the mainstream, you know? So got to give all the
always
love.
Always changing, always ebbing and flowing and evolving. Like it's a beautiful atmosphere.
Isn't it crazy? So let's talk about that. You said like evolve. That's like a big thing that I love to use on this podcast, of like watching it from like back then in the days, mm-hmm. you know, of like even like me, like watching like the beginning of the 90s and all that, you know, so it, to like where it is now and, you know, discovering the independent scene, you know, and this is why we do these interviews, you know, so we can get it out there, you know, so people can see, you know, where people were before the fact of whether they get signed or not. You know, but talk about like from your perspective of like the evolvement of wrestling within like the last, you know, 30 years.
It's been crazy. So for a while it was, you would go to independent shows in the early 2000s and you'd see all these individual tape traders lugging around all of these VHS tapes, and then DVDs started becoming more prominent, so they were able to carry more because, you know, DVD cases smaller and lighter and everything. And then YouTube blew up, and then people, you know, all these promotions started having to make a choice. Well, do we go 100% with DVDs? Do we start investing in YouTube? Do we still bother with VHS at all? Do we do it all in-house, or do we go through like a Smartmark Video and RF Video? Because a lot of promotions started doing their own in-house video around then. It wasn't like once Ring of Honor started doing their own, they broke away from RF Video and started doing their own in-house production. And then CZW caught wind and started making their own DVDs and really carved their own look out. And then all of these promoters that were in this previous DVD-centric economy learned how to do all this again with YouTube. And so they would start airing their shows, you know, the hour-long YouTube shows we used to see that were kind of like the equivalent of like cable access TV in the early 2000s, you know, those hour-long shows Saturday mornings. And then now we have streaming with like these individual networks, as we see with IWTV, Title Fight, High Spots, all of those, all of those, you know?
Yeah.
So just in terms of how we put out footage, like that's like one small avenue, you know, because then we talk about how much easier it is for wrestlers and companies to make merch. I mean, that has come like light years over the past 20 years. But just I think the video output is probably the way that like it's the easiest way to illustrate to everybody that, you know, it used to be if you wanted to keep up with your favorite promotions, you were airing out your weekly paychecks at the local ice cream bar to the websites to buy, you know, your DVDs or your VHSs to, you know, people you didn't know or people that would just put out these like very large, like almost notepad type websites where it's just like, these are the tapes I have available. Give us a phone call or send a letter with any of the tapes that you might want. And then, you know, weeks upon weeks later, you're praying that they didn't scam you, and then they come in the mail.
Right.
But that, yeah, just one example. But I mean, in every other way, it's our audio production at indie wrestling shows. If you watch a DVD from 2002, 2003, some of that audio production sounds like the adults in a Charlie Brown special. And now it comes through crisp and clear, you know, shout out to guys like Coral over at Beyond.
Yeah.
Yeah, just I could go on all day about what's changed, what's the same, et cetera. But yeah, those are a couple examples.
I was crazy. I think a couple of weeks ago I was watching old school JPW, and it was like old, and I was like, oh my god! I was like, look at like this, to like where we are now. you know, but
your name dropped Jersey All Pro. I should have worn my B-Boy shirt from that I got 15, 20 years ago from Jersey All Pro.
Isn't it crazy? Wait, let me give some love in this chat. Ethan's in the chat. What's going on? Captain Dave, what's going on? Levy's in here. Said, had to stop and send some love to you. And Mr. Torres, one of the most knowledgeable and wild minds in the business, I swear.
Oh, please.
Yeah, I figured, like, you know, this was going to be, again, like, a very interesting conversation. Even, like, you and me, like, we'll sit, we'll talk, and it's, like, everything coming out, like, there's, you know, so much knowledge. So it's, like, anybody that listens to this, throw your questions in here, you know? Like, it'll be really, really, you know, good interview. All right, so let's talk a little bit about, like, commentary, you know? Like, you know, again, like, there's all sorts of people that listen to this podcast, you know? Maybe somebody willing that wants to get into wrestling, you know, or... you know, is already in there, you know, but maybe, like, you know, let's first talk about that, like, you know, commentary, what made you do it, you know, and then we'll go deeper into it.
Commentary was interesting. So from 2008 till around 2018, I actively wrestled. Mm-hmm. And after that, I got into managing for a bit and then slid into the commentary gig full time from there. So it was really a lot of sort of sampling, like, not sampling, but, like, trying out different roles. And all the while, through wrestling and through managing, I had various people tell me, like, you know, you'd probably be all right at commentary. And it, you know, had tried it out once or twice, but breaking in 2008, commentary wasn't a top priority on a lot of indie wrestling promoters, you know, budgets. You know, they were worried about everything else. So it was the first couple years of commentary work for me was accepting that, like, you might not get paid at all for it because, like, it wasn't on the budget. And I even remember telling some promoters who I knew they had video, and I would tell them, like, look, I'll do the commentary for nothing if you have the equipment. I would just rather the show have commentary, because from the other side of the coin, like, growing up with indie wrestling in the mid 2000s, a lot of those shows didn't have commentary, and sometimes as a viewer then, it was harder for me to get into shows that didn't have commentary, as opposed to now. I don't really have that issue with watching shows anymore, but back then that was a hang up for me. So I always thought about that, you know, moving forward. It was like 7-8 years, because I started doing commentary with Blitzkrieg first. Joey Eastman had asked me about it, and it just yelled across the building at Enfield, "Hey, I do commentary." And sure, I'll give it a try. It was me and Molly McCoy on that show. Shay McCoy, you may know know them as now. But and then from there, just been doing regular commentary. Limitless tried me out. Grimes tried me out, and they apparently like it enough so far. They ain't thrown me out yet, you know. So, Yeah, getting in the commentary, it really took a lot of just, like, everything I learned from wrestling, the nuggets that I picked up from managing, and then just all the time I had spent being a super fan and poring over results and blogs and editorials and stuff like that. So it all kind of came to a head. So I probably in the best place for me at this point.
Yeah, that's really, like, awesome. So, like, let's talk about this. Let's talk about, like, you know, what's one of your, you know, favorite things about doing commentary?
One thing I love about it is when I actively wrestled, you have the 100% appreciation and focus on your segment or your segment. So your promo, your match, you know, if you have a post-match promo, and you're focused on far less than 100% of the entire show. Mm-hmm. And then once I got into commentary, especially doing commentary for an entire show, I really gained an appreciation for shows that have a nice flow front to back, where, you know, it opens with a really fast-paced one, and then the second match afterwards is something that completely flips the script. Mm-hmm. So one thing I love about commentary is that I get to act as sort of like a tour guide for the audience watching at home throughout the entire show, 100% of it. I'm the first one to say hello to them. I'm the last one to say goodbye. So that's one thing I really gained an appreciation on, was getting to really take in how different shows have different flows. And then all the while, you know, getting to narrate and navigate that whole journey with them.
Yeah, it's you guys are like important for us too. Like I'll sit in, for example, like the chaotic Twitch, and I'll be in there if I'm not physically there. And then like even like the other day, they had a show, and there was a wrestler in there, and I didn't know who they were. And I was like, "Well, who is this?" So I was like, "You know, this is a new face to me." And then they started talking about like, "Okay, so this is so and so. This person's from here. You know, like you might have seen them here." And I was like, "Oh, perfect! Like I have no clue who this person is." But now I just learned like a whole bunch of things, you know, about this wrestler because, you know, they're keeping the eye on like the chat. So even like, I mean, I know like Grind, which we'll get into, like Grind's not live, you know, but here it is like, you know, let's say like Limitless or something that you're sitting behind and then, you know, people are hashtagging, you know, like, do you find it hard to like keep like interaction, you know, if you're gonna with the fans or.
It's difficult, especially live. Unless there's like a setup where we can see a feed of like the of what the hashtag is doing at that time.
Right.
So like there's been various production takes I've seen on that. Some of them have had a separate like a whole separate screen that's just for the socials. Right. Others have occasional little like lower thirds that'll pop up at the bottom of the screen with, you know, essentially quote tweeting somebody live on the broadcast. And then other times I'll like just I'll pull out my phone, type in the tweet or the hashtag real quick, and then just be like out of the corner of my eye seeing, you know, what are people reacting for? What are they not reacting for? A lot of the times it doesn't really affect my overall presentation. I'll outside of encouraging them to tweet at us.
Right.
A lot of my reading on these hashtags comes in the hours after the show where I really get to take in like the, like I was saying before about like the flow of a show from front to back. I get to see that like unfold like ribbon style on social media, just from Twitter. Like, okay, here's what they thought of the opening match. Okay. Then the second match and, oh, we got a little less tweets for the third match. We might've had some drop off, you know, but notes for next time. But so social media, hashtags in that regard, there's a bunch of different approaches to it, but they're all invaluable because the feedback is all out there.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So that's why I was like encouraged, like, oh, I want those hashtags, like put it out there. Even if it's live and it's like tweet at it, because then like sometimes if I'm not at a show or I can't watch the show, but then you want to go through like the hashtags. And then you want to go see what's going on, you know, so I encourage.
In the early days of commentary, sometimes I would just make up like, okay, what's the name of the show? The name of the show is, all right, it's Bash at the Beach. All right, everybody, the hashtag is Bash at the Beach, you know, but like even without direction. Now in, you know, 2023, every promoter is pretty much really savvy about, we know what the hashtag is. We get it out to all of our wrestlers and all of our staff and they all share accordingly.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So, so good. All right. So who's like some of your influences?
I think for commentary. So like there's the ones that you'll always hear about because they're the ones we grew up with. You know, right. So you got Jim Ross, Jerry Lawler, Gorilla Monsoon, Jesse Ventura, all the ones that if you were buying tapes, what you were finding was, you know, Golden Era WWF stuff, whatever your preferred Golden Era is, everybody has one. So I think when you go to Ring of Honor, then Gabe, his many alter egos throughout his time as the lead commentator of Ring of Honor, was one of my favorites. Him getting so worked up about overly dangerous things. I don't think I'd ever heard anybody, you know, yell blood curdling dangerous quite like Gabe. Really turned a corner when I started watching indies on a regular, like the smaller indies on a regular basis, and I got my first taste of IWA Mid-South. And they would regularly feature the broadcast team of Dave Prazak and CM Punk, which was just to me like the best mixture of when it's serious, they were as good as it gets about calling everything serious. But when it was comedy, my God, they had me in stitches on the other side. And And then, like, fast forward to our present day, Kevin Kelly and Chris Charlton on the New Japan English broadcast team is, like, accomplishes that same thing to me that Dave Prazak and CM Punk used to. Like, they tell all the stories. They have all these extra stats ahead of time, both that they compile and Chris Samsa compiles. And then they also have all these inside jokes that they constantly share with, like, so if you're a regular fan and Tomaki Hanma makes his entrance, Kevin Kelly always goes, "Oh, hey, it's Hanma." Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're a one-time watcher, you're just like, "Oh, Kevin Kelly's really excited about Hanma." But if you're an every time you watch, you're like, "Oh, he did the thing." Those are things. Kevin Kelly is probably, like, my favorite to watch, period, right mm-hmm. now. He's the perfect mix of, like, knowledgeable pro wrestling commentator who draws all these influences. Like he's very transparent about the fact that he's an avid baseball fan, and you can hear elements of great baseball commentary in his commentary as well. Right. And then, yeah, I can't say enough about Kevin Kelly and Chris Charlton. I think those are like the current, I'll put it this way. That's the current team right now where if I'm feeling myself after like a weekend's commentary, like I think I did a really good job, I put on Kevin Kelly and Chris Charlton. I'll just be like, I got some work to do.
That's awesome. So like how would you describe yourself like doing commentary? Like where does it, like what makes you different? Like when you're sitting behind the mic?
So I like to think it's a combination of the fact that I played a lot of video games as a kid. I play a lot of video games now. I pored over the Death Valley Driver message board of like move list that was around for the longest time. It was this giant, ungodly huge text document that had seemingly every wrestling move that had ever happened. And as I was always really interested in just like the scientific names for things. And then the double ring stretch that went on to become the Rings of Saturn and you know, little things like that, always just like the science of it. We always talk about pro wrestling as an art, but pro wrestling is a sweet science too. And I don't think it gets enough credit in that avenue.
Right.
So that was always something that people give me credit for a lot is, hey, you know what everything is called, and you know who did what, or and like, no, I the truth be told is like, no, I don't, because there's plenty that I go back and watch footage and I'm like, oh, you know, he did that move too. I had no idea. You know, I've been missing that call, and this guy's been right under my nose all these years. So like I don't know it all, but yeah. I've been around long enough that I know a good amount, I guess. That and the other thing that promoters and fans they apparently and wrestlers, they like the blood curdling shrieking that I'll do when somebody nearly lands on their head or something. Yeah, but Perry Von Vicious loves that.
Well, actually, since we just brought up Perry Von Vicious, he actually sent a tweet out for us, a question for you. So he wants to know, what is your favorite episode of Community?
That's a hard, it is a tough question. Like, I have a definitive answer.
Right.
It'll always be Pillows and Blankets, the two-part Civil War documentary of, like, the world's biggest pillow fight.
Yeah.
But the truth is like seasons 2 and 3 of Community are just such a masterpiece. They really lean into all their parody elements. But if I have to pick one, it's Pillows and Blankets. You got Keith David narrating. The tone is so perfect. They've got Gatorade bottles flipped upside down to act like IV bags in their makeshift infirmary. No stone is left unturned for all the ridiculous details they could have put out on that episode. Me and Perry's chat on Facebook Messenger is proof. We can go on about that episode for a long time. Masterpiece.
I love that. I definitely love that very much. Oh, hi, good cop, bad cop. All right, so he says, I'm a little late, so heading back to the start, but with Johnny Torres being an anagram of Northern Jays, what place you the most, I'm sorry, Northern Joys, what place brings you the most joy in Northern USA?
Place that brings me the most joy in Northern USA.
Very specific. Like,
yeah, definitely. I mean, like, I don't, like there's definitely, I've heard people say they have their Zen spots, like the one place that they go when, you know, their head's clouded and they're trying to clear their mind. I think the best, like, and it's just the most like cliche cop out answer, and I don't like it, but I don't have like the Zen place answer that you're looking for there. But there's this period of about 2 to 3 minutes before I know that that we're gonna go live for commentary, mm-hmm. like the calm before the storm. There's something a little otherworldly about like that last couple minutes. Like, want to look something up? It's too late now. You want to go get a drink? It's too late now. You're here. You're ready to go. And then it's just breathe in, breathe out, and that's probably the most Zen place I can really think of is wow. the 3 minutes before a show is about to go live.
Wow, look at that. Oh, wow. I love that. Well, I hope that suffices. Good hop, bad cop. I'm dead. Hey, Jay. Jay's in the chat. He said, John asks, John asks, what is your favorite promotion?
Favorite promotion. If we're going to go current as a fan, it's New Japan Pro Wrestling. Favorite to work for right now, I can't pick a favorite to work for right now because like all three of them are really different, you know? So like Blitzkrieg, Grind, and Limitless, like you can think of them as the three triangles of the Triforce, three spiritual stones, help you pull out the Master Sword in the forest. But they're all like, those three are like my favorite places to work.
And they're in three different states. Look at that.
Right. No, even better. I know. As a fan, as working. And then like when I was growing, I'll throw in this one as sort of a bonus. Actually, I got two more for you. Favorite spot to watch to scout when I was wrestling was PWG.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, circa like 2013, 2014 PWG was absolutely like, if I'm trying to keep my fingers on the pulse of what wrestling's doing and where wrestling's going, these are the DVDs or I need to keep watching, the shows I need to keep watching. And then it's got to be for just like all time, like the first time wrestling caused my heart to grow three sizes Grinch style, it's Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a couple answers for you, but I got an interesting timeline with pro wrestling, so I got to cover it all.
Yeah, no, definitely. More questions in the chat. Jay said Jay's writing for John. John also asks if Johnny thinks a hot dog is a sandwich. Here we go.
What if a hot dog is a sandwich?
Here we go on this pod. It's the running joke.
I love that you get running joke questions. So I think if we're talking like hot dog in a bun, then no. If we're talking hot dog, like, because some of my family members have done a hot dog in between just two pieces of bread, and like, yeah, that's a hot dog sandwich, you know. So, but if the original question is asking for if the hot dog in a bun is a sandwich, I'm gonna go with no. But I don't work at food service. I'm not the expert.
I don't know how, but a lot of times on this podcast, I mean, we're on episode 212. A lot of times, food always comes up on this podcast, and it's crazy. And like Alex Zane is always the one that like I go back to, like my first actual interview with Alex Zane, which was like the beginning, you know. And he was talking about, we were talking about tacos, and every time like I had set questions for him, we just always go back to food and tacos. And like every time he returns on the podcast, we always talk about food, you know. Miracle Generation's been on, and you know, shout out to Everything Pro Wrestling because he likes to trigger them about cereal and milk.
Oh gosh.
You know, so I guess I'm gonna have to ask you this because since it's the running joke pretty much, like, so do you pour your milk in first and then your cereal, or do you put your cereal in first and then pour your milk?
I am a dry cereal person.
There you go. Very different.
That's why I looked off to the side when you were like, I'm gonna ask you this question. I'm like, I don't know. Here's the outlier answer.
I'm curious, like, you know, like Dustin was talking about that he was going to block people or have people block him if you poured your milk in first, you know, and then put your cereal. It got very serious.
I saw little smatterings of it on Twitter. I'm like, why is everybody getting all worked up over cereal and milk?
Oh my God. It was really bad. It was bad. So, and then Ref Gino, we had, we talked about the sandwich and hot dogs. So yeah, it's a running joke. So, but, yeah, Jack's in the chat. Hi, Jack. He says hi to us both. Hello. Thank you for coming on in. So, all right. So again, let's talk about the New England scene because it's insane. Yeah. And like, I'm like obsessed, obviously. Here I am. I'm the New Yorker, you know? So it's like, I feel during the pandemic is really where I started really watching a lot of more, Limitless, I found because of John Alba. Shout out to John Alba. Love you very, very much. Which there's a whole story behind that. So that's why, like, I was so glad that I finally came up to Limitless for one of the actual shows in Maine. But yeah, it's like really out there, you know? So we got Blitzkrieg, like you said, there we got Grind. We got Limitless, three of the promotions that you work at. So talk about, you know, a little bit about each one for everybody if they're like not as familiar with it.
So, well, if we're going chronologically, while Blitzkrieg and Limitless have been around right around the same time frame, both had very unique identities starting off. Blitzkrieg Pro started at Mount Carmel Park in Enfield, and the whole idea was really wanted to be the punk rock pro wrestling party. You know, the final word, the emphasis, party. Blitzkrieg Pro, Jeremy, Skyler, everybody involved under the hood at Blitzkrieg. It has always been about fan experience being paramount, characters coming in right behind, and then, you know, everything in terms of thinking out of the box while still putting on the highest quality wrestling product possible. That's essentially where Blitzkrieg's core tenets are. But definitely has been from the very beginning a very much, and they say this regularly, it's very much a pro wrestling DIY promotion. It's very much by them for every fan that's been with them from day one, and you know, every wrestler that's been there from near day one, because we have a lot of originals still hanging around the Blitzkrieg scene. And Blitzkrieg hasn't seen a glass ceiling that hasn't been able to break yet. They've made leaps and bounds on production in every step of the word. They work with GoPro on a regular basis now, and that comes from once upon a time, you know, shooting shows in the middle of October, with just, you know, a hand cam or two and, you know, audio. We had wind whipping everywhere, so you'd get the mics picking up the wind. So, Blitzkrieg has come a long way, and they've done it on their own merits and by their own design. Limitless, that's a very common thread there as well, you know, by their own merits and by their own design. Limitless Wrestling started originally because when I was coming up in the Massachusetts, Connecticut wrestling scene, 2008, 2009, that's really 2010 when I started going to Maine. And the first thing that many people around the scene had said was, don't go to Maine. Don't go to Maine. There's nothing really happening there. The people up there, you know, they wrestle in Maine, and then they, you know, they don't do anything else. And you know, the typical stuff that if you're a wrestler coming up in pro wrestling now, you've probably heard somebody in your immediate circle say the same thing, because, you know, history repeats itself. But Limitless, Randy Carver, from the jump had always been, we want to make Maine a pro wrestling destination, where, you know, change that reputation for the entire state that was once viewed as a wasteland, which once, you know, if you were getting 70 people to show up, you know, on a Saturday night show, that was considered, you know, that was a good day. It must not have been a football game that day, you know, something to that effect.
Yeah.
And then fast forward a couple years, the show they're doing in, you know, in Westbrook or at the expo in Portland, or, you know, they're able to pull in Yarmouth on a regular basis, you know, mission already accomplished. You know, I think back to, I was in a tag team ladder match in Cornville, Maine, for a school that is no longer open, in front of 13 people for a ladder match. And then we fast forward to 200, 300 plus on a regular basis for Limitless. And then after that, seeing the success of both Limitless and Blitzkrieg and having a unique vision of their own came Pro Wrestling Grind. Because when the pandemic happened and Delmi was doing a tour over in Marvelous, it was me and Ripper 100% of the time doing those drives for any of the Limitless, the road shows, the pandemic at the dojo, that first series. But, you know, so that was where some of those seeds really started getting planted, was just, you know, what if, you know, there's others around, but what if there was an alternative? Because at this point, wherever we were staying in Maine, what we were putting on when we would get done with taping, it was always Japanese wrestling. It was always, you know, early 90s, late 80s, All Japan, or it was mid 2000s Pro Wrestling Noah, or it was just some bloodbath we happened to find from New Japan. But it was always just continuously being like, this is the style of wrestling that we really gravitate towards. And we don't speak the same language as any of the commentators, any of the interviewers, don't know what any of the fans are chanting at anybody, but wrestling is a universal language. And so we're still able to see, like, oh, well, that guy, none of these people like this guy. He's clearly not getting out of here without security's help. And like, oh, they love this guy. He must be shaking hands and kissing babies up and down Main Street.
Right.
And it just really grew from there to the point where, like, that was the original vision. Like, or like even before Grind had a name, before Grind had a home, like, that was, like, the little embryo, if you will, was like what the style inspiration was. Mm-hmm. And then Delmi came home and Perry with his design influences. So Delmi immediately latched on and then took the art direction, all her, the merch design, all her. Yeah. At this point, I don't do really any of the back office stuff anymore. It's all them at this point. And I've told them multiple times, if you need anything, you know, reach out and ask. But at this point, like, I know they don't need me. They got this operation, you know, down on lock. But they've gotten to see, you know, they watched Blitzkrieg Pro grow for, you know, a couple years. They watched Limitless grow for a couple years. And, I mean, Delmi alone with her unique experiences, Shimmer and Shine, anywhere else that she's been, she's gotten to see a whole other side of the coin that none of us have ever seen before, about how promotions could or could not be, should or should not be run, you know? Right. So, like, a whole unique set of insights on her own.
Right.
So, yeah, at this point, that's a little something about all three. And I tried to tie each of them together.
Yeah, no, it's awesome, which I'm going to tie them together in a minute also, too. But let me give love in the chat. Ethan says, I remember hearing about that ladder match, the greatest ladder match that no one ever saw.
I'm pretty sure it's on a YouTube channel somewhere, like one of those ones that has like 8 subscribers, but it's up there somewhere.
too funny. And Kylon King's in the chat. Hi, Kai. What's
Buddy.
Up? Says hi to both of us. So actually, let's talk about WrestleVille, because like I figured it was like the perfect, you know, we could dart right into that, because here are three promotions, you know, that was at this past WrestleVille. And I didn't really get a chance to like talk so much about WrestleVille on this podcast. I took a break for a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I mean, last year I got sick. I was very upset. I had the flu. So I was pissed because I was so excited, to come up there, because there was like a bunch of promotions I wanted to see. I'm so happy that I got to make this trip with all the amazing. I mean, not that there wasn't amazing promotions last year, because there was. But like this was like my perfect WrestleVille this last year, and Blitzkrieg was there and Limitless was there, and I got to be also at the Limitless Blitz show in October. So that was fun too. I think it was what else, it just keeps going and going, so you just you can't remember exactly like pin it where it was, but I finally got to like an actual Blitz show. I got to a Limitless and Grind, like three great promotions. Love it. So again, WrestleVille, you know, everyone should at least experience it once.
Unreal. So in a sort of parallel, like your own experience, your last year paled in comparison to your this year. Mm-hmm. Mine ramped up in a similar manner, just because between like between the illness situation going around at the time, Blitzkrieg had to cancel theirs. Mm-hmm. So it originally went from me calling two shows to calling the Limitless show. Mm-hmm. So it was cool for me from last year having called one show. Fast forward to this past one where I got to call three. Mm-hmm. So that was a cool way of ramping up in my own way. And this was also like this festival, I got to watch more wrestling than mm-hmm. I did the previous year as well. Like I caught 8 of the 9 shows. Mm-hmm. So even just getting to sit and take in wrestling, you know, and not have to be on the job is sort of a rare treat these days for me. So yeah, Restival was both, you know, a fun weekend of making good work and a fun weekend of, you know, meeting new people and seeing a bunch of shows that I, you know, wasn't sure. Some I, you know, don't know if I would have been in a position to see otherwise. So it's great.
Yeah, definitely like check it out. If you haven't watched it, definitely go back on IWTV and go watch all those 9 shows. Well worth it. You know, a lot of fun. I also enjoy when wrestlers hang out and they watch the shows too. Me and Kathleen were sitting at the ICW, and I think it was one of the most funniest experiences that I ever had was watching her freak out watching ICW, and I'm like, this is tamed. And she's like, no, why is he doing that? So like, so I get it, you know, for you guys. I mean, even Grind, you know, like I talked about this about Perry Von Vicious, that he came out during Delmi's match, you know, it's like kind of like, oh, you know, like I'm watching like front row center, you know, I'm getting this, you know, here's Delmi, like I have to watch this match. Even coming up to Grind, me and Ethan talked about it too at the last week on the podcast, you know, that mm-hmm. a lot of you guys like will like just sit and watch and enjoy. And I think I get like, I don't know how anybody else feels about it, but I enjoy it, you know, that anybody gets to sit there and support these wonderful promotions and enjoy the matches that their friends are having.
Now, it's funny you say that, because like once upon a time that was like considered like taboo. And, you know, you like, or like you'd have to like peek through the curtain and be a real secretive if you wanted to watch a match. And even sometimes, you know, the guy that's, you know, 55 years experience in the business would come up and be like, oh, what you watching matches for?
Yeah. I know, it's like, can't do that. Or I hear the ones where the talent can't take photos with the big names that like come in during the shows, you know, like,
yeah, some things like history repeats itself, and that, you know, rules and tenets that were uttered, you know, 20, 30, 50 years ago will rear their heads again. And some of those, like, they can rear their heads and then they can just stay gone.
Yeah.
Because that was one that was repeated a lot when I was growing up that I like wish I had never paid much heat, you know, paid much credence to.
Right. Right. Okay, so we got some more questions in here. What is your favorite match that you got to call?
Favorite match that I got to call? From recently, I'll tell you, Anthony Henry and Kevin Blackwood to open up Limitless's Restival show. That's the first one that comes to mind, I'll say that. Mm. Running through any others. Also from recently, from the Pug Pro show, Aaron Rourke and Kylon King went crazy. That match is unbelievable.
Yeah.
generally, anytime. The Market Zero ladder match from Blitzkrieg was a big time favorite to call, and that's probably just because I think it's like the greatest Bobby Orlando performance I've ever seen in my life. That dude proved he had a spine of adamantium or vibranium or something that's not easily breakable, because that dude tested the pliability of his back with ladders and what have you in every way he could. Mm-hmm. That was otherworldly. Guy didn't win the match, but he won the hearts of everybody there. Thinking if there's, I was gonna say that Kevin Blackwood Anthony Henry match, I think I'm gonna stick with that one. Okay. Because that to me is like my favorite dimension of pro wrestling. When I as a commentator, I'm completely lost in it, like, you know, to the point where I'm literally sitting forward in my chair, my elbows on my knees, and I'm not, it's not, you know, it's it's another level of combat sport at that point.
Right.
You know, when we're mixing in, you know, martial arts style point fighting now, that's something where like where you can catch me putting my elbows on my knees and like I'm locked in here.
Yeah.
But yeah, it generally anything like any of those kind of matches always get me. Another one that just came to mind during the closed taping era of Limitless Wrestling. It's not a popular statement, but in terms of the matches that came out of that, it's my favorite era of Limitless mm-hmm. Wrestling. Between mm-hmm. the Rip Bison, Big Beef, Rip Bison, JD Drake, those two matches from the closed taping era are two others that were my favorites to call. Ripper and JD, that was one that, you know, both had like Ripper knew he wanted it. JD had met Ripper, watched a Ripper match, and you know, in his own way was like, yes, he wants this too.
Yeah.
And then the first time it happened, you know, as you would imagine, it was truly kismet.
Yeah.
And if there's that's another match that I'm due to see one more time. If I call it, you know, it's cool. But I just want to see it again.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's so, another one.
Somebody got
The Gnarls Garvin or the Beef Changed Man era, where he was briefly coming out, rolling his eyes into the back of his head and doing, you know, claw slamming Ripper off the stage. He was in a world of his own at that point. Yeah, crazy time. Those were two matches that will always stand out for me, and both happened to involve my good buddy Rip Bison.
Yes. I love it. How do you deal with people like me that make songs that, like, you know, make Mike sad?
I leave that gag alone, and somebody came up to me and was like, hey, you got to call them the Sad Boys on commentary. I'm like, why am I going to be jabbing at this dude being sad? Wrestling's what makes us happy. If he's sad, then he's happier now, you know?
But he's sad. Mike is very sad.
I don't know him that well. So I'm like, I'll take your word for it. You clearly know him way better than I do. But I mean, then again, if you're Moonlight Sun, could be a sad thing.
It is sad. He's sad.
Maybe he's like Moon?
He's a sad guy. I don't know. Like, he's.
I got to try to get a read on that. Because I was going to say, every time I see him, he's a big smile, big hug. I'm like, I don't know why.
People hashtag make that. Mike sad.
Wait, you want to make him sad?
No, that's the hashtag. Hashtag make Mike sad. Listen, he was already sad. Okay? We just created the hashtag. You know, hashtag make Mike sad, because he's sad.
Mike, I'm going to need an explanation on this, Mike.
Hot mess. All right. So now, like, we're in 2023. Who do you think, and it's early, it's February, who do you think is our breakout star of 2023?
Breakout star. So breakout star is a tough term because there's levels to it.
Yeah.
You know? Like, there's, like, people that have broken out that, like, from an IWTV perspective, but then on the national TV sphere, they don't, you know, they aren't, or they're a blip on the radar there. So if we're going by that, where it's somebody that's, you know, regularly recognized as a potential show stealer everywhere they go, and like, it's only a matter of time before they've got a big fat contract come their way.
Right.
It's Alec Price. There's no other answer there in terms of a guy that at this point is like every major part of his game is refined
mm-hmm.
and to the part where like I don't really see any hairs out of place with his game to begin with. So it's just a matter of, you know, who's got the right idea at the right time for him to get this shot, because that's really the problem now with the current scene mm-hmm. is that, like, Alec is my pick, but the reality is that there's probably 25, 50, 100, depending on your definition of ready, of wrestlers that are ready for a next stage, a national stage, mm-hmm. an international stage, whether it's getting the nod, you know, the nod in Japan, or just getting, you know, the European tour or MLW Impact, anything in the States here.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a tough part about that, because then you have the next level down where it's the people that are on shows that may not be featured regularly on a streaming network, right, or they're sparingly featured on a streaming network. So like those are people that are like, they might have the same, you know, Alec Price, Jordan Oliver, Blake Christian, you know, or, you know, from the, you know, bigger guy perspective, you know, people like a JD Drake, like a Jake something, mm-hmm, but they're just not getting the IWTV time, mm-hmm, where like people aren't regularly seeing their events featured on a fight TV or anything like that. So then there's people like that. And I think about some of the local people around here, some of like the students we know in New York that are coming up, like, people are figuring out A-Game Joe Alexander, mm-hmm, like they're learning his name really fast between Paradigm, between Battle Club Pro, between Pro Wrestling Grind. Same thing can be said for his classmate at T2T, Money Dragon Angelo Carter, mm-hmm, living in the moment, you know. But Angelo constantly putting in the work, putting in the miles. Those are like two names that would be on my list of people that are going to break out from a IWTV. You're going to see them featured more on shows that are featured on IWTV. I wouldn't be shocked if I saw them a lot more on Restival next year, if we saw them on like the IWTV featured shows next year, this year. Couple names there, probably going to be plenty more that come to mind as time goes.
Of course. And you can check out those two interviews on the podcast too. Angelo, hey, and Joseph have both been on this podcast back to back the same week.
Of course.
So definitely go check. It was just funny. It just like happened that way. So, all right. So actually Ethan Scott had sent in a question for you. He said, if you had to pick three matches to show someone who wanted to get into wrestling, what matches are you picking?
Ooh. Three to get into wrestling. I have like two ways I interpret that question, you know? Mm-hmm. So like for people that like want to get into wrestling, like have never seen a pro wrestling match before and would like to see like what pro wrestling is, versus people that have been fans and want to get into the wrestling side of it, like three matches that would potentially convince them. I'm assuming based on context that he meant people that had never seen wrestling before and, you know, what would you show them for first time matches? And if we go with that interpretation, the first answer is always going to be the ROH Dragon Gate six man from Better Than Our Best Dragon Gate Challenge. It was that golden weekend in 2006. But Blood Generation and Do Fixer, it's on YouTube. I literally show this match to every person that I stay with and say, hey, have you seen the Dragon Gate 6-man? No? Or we're putting on right now. Ripper's been put through it multiple times. Danger Kid's been put through it multiple times, to the point where if I put it on at somebody else's house and Danger Kid is there, he'll look at me and go, oh, you putting on the match? Yeah. Oh, yeah. So that's an easy number one. So if... My first one was like a speedster one. My second one would have to really.
Oh no! Nothing to the audio. Hang on. You're buzzing. Hold on. Why are we getting buzzing? Skype. All right, let's see if this works. Yeah, we have an audio connect. I think it might be your headset. I can't hear you. Wait, I think it's better now.
Yeah, I had
okay, there we go. I was like, I thought it was on my end. I was like, wait a minute. I was like, I checked the wire, and I'm like, no, it's good. It could have been the headset. I'm sorry about that, guys.
It was my headset. Let's do this.
Okay. We're good now. Sorry. It happens.
I use, you know, that's my work headset too. So, you know, you count on it being reliable.
I was like, wait a minute. Is this on my, let me know in the chat if everything's good. Cause it sounds, yeah. So even Good Cop said it's better. Okay, cool.
Perfect.
I thought it was sorry like, wait that. A minute. Sorry guys. All right. He goes, I was looking forward, Good Cop back, I said, I was looking forward to a round of wrestling charades if that sounds stage messed up.
Oh, man, no, that'd be a mess. How am I going to pantomime the Dragon Gate 6, man? How do I pantomime? Oh, no, Doomsday Dragon Lava!
6? All right, please continue. I'm so sorry.
Oh, yeah, for the three matches... we're going to go with the fastest match ever in the Dragon Gate 6-man Do Fixer Blood Generation. Mm-hmm. To me, the match that changed everything. It changed the whole like fast-paced American style. Mm-hmm. So everybody learned about, you know, there's a new speed level once the Dragon Gate 6-man happened. Once that whole weekend happened, really, because that was an insane weekend. Even the shows that happened, you know, in the days leading up to that. But Blood Generation and Do Fixer, it's free on YouTube on ROH's channel. If you haven't seen it, check it out. It's unbelievable. It's the closest I've ever seen to like a Jet Li movie and, you know, masterful Lucha Libre all within, you know, an American pro wrestling ring. That to me is absolute magic. That's like, and if we're showcasing a speed thing, that's the first match I would show. Second one would have to be something that has to do with, you know, like a power struggle. Mm-hmm. I had a couple matches that come to mind here, but it would be Joe versus Kobashi, another Ring of Honor match that absolutely changed the landscape. It was potentially the greatest independent wrestling match that happened that year, potentially like the best match in the world that year. Mm-hmm. And it, which is wild that it might not have even been Kobashi's best match of the year, because he had a crazy one with Kensuke over in Japan. That's another one that I show everybody all the time. But we'd probably do that. So Dragon Gate 6-man, Joe versus Kobashi, both ROH matches. And then if I pick a third, I would pick something that pulls at my heartstrings a little bit more. Two come to mind, and they're both Shawn Michaels matches. We're going to go with Shawn Michaels and Triple H from SummerSlam 02 in the unsanctioned street fight. I was just getting back into WWF, WWE around that time. And that pay-per-view to me is... like, and that's another one. If you've crashed at the same house as I've crashed at or been on the road with me, you know you're gonna hear about Ring of Honor, and you're hearing about SummerSlam 02 a whole lot. And it's bookended by two of the greatest matches ever, and that you got Rey Mysterio and Kurt Angle to open, and then you got, you know, the unsanctioned, and then you got Brock Rock to close. Yeah. So you got, you know, crazy bookends on that. But Shawn Michaels and Triple H, and just everything segment wise and narrative wise that led up to that point. And then you got, you know, Blue Jean Shawn Michaels for the first time ever. Can he still hack it? Mm-hmm. And like, there was just like when WWF, WWE gets something right, they get it really, really right. You know, like they don't hit doubles or triples, they hit singles or they hit grand slams.
Yeah.
And when they hit grand slams like that one, like that's one I still think about, you know, Sean's raspy voice, don't hunt what you can't kill, and everything that happened after that, even like it continued after SummerSlam. Mm-hmm. But where it all began, Blue Jean Shawn Michaels, the shrug of the shoulders at the top of the ladder, that was something where I'm like, this guy might be the coolest guy on earth. And he hasn't done this in years. Insane.
There you go. Also, three matches, too, that I feel like can study, like wrestlers can study, since wrestlers are constantly studying matches. So, absolutely. There you go. There's some great matches. So, great picks on that sense. So, thank you for that. All right. So, like, I know you're a big gamer, too.
Oh, yes.
So, let's talk about which system is your favorite. And, you know, what is one of your, let's do old school game.
Sure. Sure. Like with wrestling, my video gaming, I started with Super Nintendo was where that all began. I got the Donkey Kong Country pack. That subsequently is the first video game I ever beat ever, was the first Donkey Kong Country. Needless to say, that series has stayed near and dear to my heart all this time. I still love Donkey Kong Country. I still go chasing down, you know, original takes on the soundtracks. I'm that kind of video game nerd. But, so yeah, Super Nintendo, Game Boy. So I was Nintendo for the longest time. The first Sega system I had, I got a Dreamcast. Sophomore year of high school, I won it on eBay because I was really going through I really wanted Marvel vs. Capcom 2, and I really wanted to play Japanese wrestling games. And I had heard that the Dreamcast was the end. There was a Street Fighter game that I really want, a Third Strike. I really want to play Street Fighter Third Strike as well. So that was like, all right, I guess my only option is I got to find a Dreamcast. So ended up paying probably more than I should have on an eBay bid for it. But
They have those retro like stores, especially here. Like,
yeah,
crazy.
Now they do.
Yeah. Oh yeah, now they do. It's so cool, like those stores.
So I mean, if we walk down that path, like fast forward to recently. So I've gotten into, because I worked in software development pull back the curtain a little bit. I work in software engineering and software development. So I created a little retro gaming system type deal that I can play a bunch of old games on, and it's like modded, so it's got like an achievement system built into it. Yeah, so really, really crazy stuff there. But that allows me to still play. Like, so now Nintendo Switch has rolled out all these old libraries. But before, like, if I wanted to play Game Boy Advance games, like if I wanted to get my Mega Man Battle Network on, then, you know, I was out of luck. They hadn't remastered those. And, you know, I'd have to either buy a Game Boy Advance, buy the cartridges, or, you know, hope that they remaster them.
Right.
So building that little system, and then joke's on me, the remaster comes out in like April or something like that.
Right.
But yeah, Nintendo for the longest time, Sega with the Dreamcast. My neighbor had a Saturn though, so I did get to play Saturn a good amount. We always traded. He'd come over to my house to play N64, and then I'd go to his house to play the Saturn. I'm mostly Sony now, because after playing, so like being a Nintendo centric gamer for such a long time, you cross all of those Nintendo franchises off the list. So like everything Mario, everything Donkey Kong, you know, all those greatest hits there. And also with that came, of course, the N64 wrestling games, the THQ AKI wrestling games.
Right.
So WCW NWO Revenge, played it, destroyed it. WrestleMania 2000, played it, destroyed it. No Mercy, played it, destroyed it. Bought everything, even the hoe in the SmackDown Mall. You know, so I had done literally everything to the point where my save battery on my No Mercy cartridge had died. So what I did was I saved copies of all of these characters onto a controller pack, all of the hidden ones, so your Ken Shamrocks, your Cactus Jacks, your Mick Foley's, Andre the Giant, everybody like that. I saved them all onto my controller pack, and then my save battery would die every single time I turned off the system, but I would turn it back on and import my saves. Now, the kick with that is the game didn't recognize that you had actually unlocked those characters. So, like, if you wanted to give a created character the Ken Shamrock ankle lock, well, that's too bad. You're going to have to go through the Hardcore Division Championship mode and get Ken Shamrock again.
Right.
But I could still play with him in, like, survival mode or anything like that. So, fun little hack out there for any of you OGs who still have your N64 No Mercy cartridges and are suffering through save battery problems.
Oh, man.
That's a little work around.
I feel like you would, you know, Steve Mac, Monster Mac, would have like a field day of like,
hey,
video game days. Shout out to Monster Mac. Much love. Everything Pro Wrestling's in the chat. What's going on? Go give him some love. Massive supporter of us. Massive supporter of him. He said, Sega, no mercy. Best game ever.
So, I went on a tangent about No Mercy, but that was the motivator of getting into the Sony systems was like, I haven't played any of the SmackDown games. I covered all of these N64 games, and I had WrestleMania, the arcade game on the earlier systems. You know, I had completely cleaned those out. Yeah. But then I see like my cousin playing like, you know, SmackDown 2, and you see the Smack travel across the screen, and just the different pace of the game. And you're like, I gotta, I explored Planet Nintendo. Like, I guess I gotta wander over to the Sony Solar System and. Mm-hmm. That's like people can't just ask me my favorite wrestling game because it becomes this whole like, well, like I love No Mercy, but like Here Comes the Pain has the best season mode out of any wrestling game.
Right.
And then like basic pick up plug and play games like Revenge, WrestleMania 2000 and No Mercy are all contenders. And then if you really want to know like what the best of all of them is, you're going to have to import a system from Japan or Hotwire your own, because it's the first Wrestle Kingdom that I played at referee Will Dojin's house on a homebrewed modded PlayStation 2. And this was like 2006 or 2007. So we had to print out all of the menu translations to play this friggin' game. But in return, it had like New Japan era Brock Lesnar in the red tights. We just got gotten the fresh tattoos.
Yeah.
And then it has like a crazy season mode where you pick your mentor and just a bunch of stuff that I'm like, I need them to localize this. So it's a tough conversation with wrestling games, but
yeah.
If anybody from Sony is listening, I need you to remaster Here Comes the Pain. Ooh, for the PS5. I need you to do that.
Everybody, like, tweet at it. That's so awesome. I just bought the other day. I had the little Nintendo that has like 600 games in it or whatever like that.
Yeah. And
I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, this is like freaking crazy. So I'm happy with that. I feel like. I'm like, oh my god, my eyes, like they're killing me. Or let me.
There's something about like, I in every sense of the word, as a gamer when I was a kid to what I am now, like I was able to eat Donkey Kong Country when I was 7.
Yeah,
I cannot beat Donkey Kong Country now. I can't do it. My reflexes have degenerated, or literally, this just happened to me like 6 months ago. My brother's got 5 kids. The first 3 of them. I've gotten a Nintendo Switch for, and they all have like, they got the Switch online so that they can play all the older games, the N64, the Super Nintendo, the NES, all that. They're all stuck on the Ghost World in Donkey Kong Country 2. And I was like, oh, I beat this when I was like 9. Now don't worry about it. I got this. Nope. Game over. Sorry, pal. Like, what happened to me?
I bet, like, I started getting, like, a headache because I felt like I was sitting in front of the television, like, too close also, too, and it's, like, the graphics, and it's, like, oh, my God. And I was, like, sitting playing that circus game, you know, where you'd, like, jump through the fire and stuff, and I'm, like, oh, my God. I was, like, I remember playing this, but, like, exactly what you said. I'm, like, damn, it was, like, when I was, you know, 5, 6 years old, no problem. I got this covered. Now it's, like, motherfucker, I want to chuck the controller.
And then, like, it's dissuaded me from playing all these other games. Like, well, man, if I remember correctly, like, Donkey Kong Country was on, like, one of the easier games that I ever beaten. So if I can't beat that now, then, well, beating Mega Man X, well, good luck. I'll be lucky if I get to Sigma. Or I'll be lucky if I get to Vile. Anyway. Yeah. But, yeah. No, there's a bunch of those games in that old library that, like, hello, old friend. I'll never play you again, but you or I will watch the YouTube playthroughs and 100% no deaths. Like, yeah, it must be nice, pal.
Yeah. Well, isn't it wild out too, like the way that it is, like with like the WWE games, and then you see like people like posting on Twitter and like they created like their favorite independent wrestlers and stuff like that. That it's so wild.
It's insane. So especially if you like trace back old video game cheats, hacks to like. When people would be dropping terms like Game Shark and Game Genie and weird little soft mods that you would do to your SmackDown games, where you know you you turn the game on, you put your memory card in, you unplug your memory card, you open the disc tray, you utter a magical incantation, you close the thing, you turn the power back on, and then you suddenly have the entire TNA roster from 2003. Like, but there's like whole like instructionals that they had on the internet about like, if you want to hack your game to be the 01 roster from Japan in Secret 2002, you can redo, you know, Steve Corino and Shinya Hashimoto. I'm like, somebody took the time to figure this out.
Yeah.
Incredible.
It's wild. And then even, I think what's also cool too, I think, was it Grind that somebody actually made a canvas of Grind? I swear.
Shout out to Brad for the Barber.
Oh my God. That was so cool. I was like, wow. Like, yeah, I think that's like
Bradford, if you give his Twitter, he does a lot of custom stages, and he does a lot of like custom attires, to the point where I know one of MSP, Danger Kid and Aiden Agro, one of their last sets of gear they got, might even been their most recent one, was inspired by Bradford's WWE 2K design.
Oh, wow.
They were like, this gear is sick. We want to actually get it made.
Is that the yellow one? The Bumblebee one?
Yeah.
Yes. I saw that at Grind. Like, they, like, did they debut that there at the Grind show? Because I was there for that.
I think so. Yeah. It was that or like the previous weekend show or something like that. But it was in that ballpark anyways. But yeah, no, that was a Bradford
the Barber. That's amazing. But that is so cool, like, to watch, you know, wrestling again, like, even on this like little Nintendo that I have here to play like old school wrestling into like where it is now. It's insane. But to see even like people wanting to make like their favorite independent wrestlers.
Right.
Chef kiss. Like, seriously.
And I mean, like the homebrewed, like wrestling game scene, like, you know, you see the physics tests that, you know, like, for those of you out there that follow the developer Gackdaw, who's doing that deathmatch wrestling video game, that's really just, it's in like a lot of physics testing and stuff going on at the moment. That's amazing. It's some of the coolest stuff I've ever seen, and I'm pretty sure it's only one person doing that. But yeah, just the amount of accessibility that there is to game engines these days for people to just tinker and make their own. You know, for the longest time, it was either got these really blocky, like homebrewed PC games, or like tech simulators like Extreme Warfare Revenge or anything like that. But now, you know, you can build full, like, nice 3D looking games with good physics and put them out to people at your leisure. You know, you look into any of like the PlayStation stores, you'll randomly run into like, is that a wrestling game? Yeah, it is. I feel like I'd only play it for, you know, a little while, but like, I'm like, good. I'm happy that the indie wrestling game market is flourishing. If that's what you're saying.
So great to see. All right, so I have two final questions for you. If anybody has anything else, drop them into the chat, and then we'll go into what's coming up. All right, what's some goals of 2023 for you?
Goals of 2023. It's funny, I'd set this end of 2022 was I want to debut for two new spots, and more of a long term one is I want to become fluent in Japanese. I want to be able to commentate in fluent Japanese. So yeah, I got the Super Duolingo going. I've been keeping on that. A 41-day streak. We're gonna keep it going. It was a slow start to the year. We're back on track. And I'm halfway there already. And I'm technically fully there already. I got the first debut was with Pug Pro at the beginning of the year, and then the second one is coming up at a date to be announced. I'm not sure if I'm able to let the cat out of the bag, but got some friends down in the tri-state area. A little more serious spin on grappling. And looking forward to putting some more like MMA and submission fighting knowledge to the test.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah, shout out to Pug Pro. That was fun. I'm glad I got to like watch that. You know, Dustin got to do a little commentary.
It was so much fun. It was very much a spur of the moment thing. It was, you know, it was initially a bummer because it was going to be like Alyssa Marino and Andy Brown are both going to be coming up, and then they both, you know, became ill, and then it sort of just fell into place because, you know, Dustin obviously wasn't counting on having to be on the shelf for that given night. Right. So it just kind of, you know, just fell into place. And, you know, it was my homie that I don't know when else I would have gotten to do commentary with him. So it was a pretty cool, like, you know, pretty cool fates crossing.
Yeah. Much love to Dustin Waller out there. So, all right. So I like to end off in a positive note. So what's a piece of advice that you would give to somebody, whether they, you know, want to get into wrestling, maybe they want to get into commentary?
Generally for anything like this, where it toes the line between like, it can be a hobby, it can be a career, it can be an outlet, it can be whatever you want it to be. But I think where I fell short early, and I wouldn't say fall short, but it was the first harsh lesson that I really had to pick up on, was like, guts and desire alone gets you a long way, but it doesn't get you all the way there. Mm-hmm. Have some semblance of plan. And when I say plan, there's a lot of people that'll talk down on that, being like, well, if you're putting half effort into two things, then you're not really giving your whole effort to one thing. That's not what I'm saying. Go out and like get a certification, get an associate's degree. So, get, you know, if you're extremely young, you know, go through a job corps program, you get the GED, you get a trade certificate, what have you, but something where you get a quality 9-to-5 Monday through Friday job, where as a result, you don't have to starve to make your bookings, and you don't have to worry about airing out all your, you know, if you get a job that airs out time off, you don't have to spend it all on saving your Saturdays so that you can do bookings. You know, if you have a Monday through Friday 9-to-5, after work gets out, you go to your training, and then Saturdays open for travel, bookings, what have you. If I could do it again, that's what I would have done differently. Because I broke in a week after my 18th birthday was when I started training. The moment I didn't need a parental signature on a waiver anymore was when I started training. In hindsight, I wouldn't have gone to the 4-year school. I would have gone to a 2-year, gotten an associate's, you know, gotten my jump start that way, and then, you know, tried wrestling out, you know, in parallel with the two. So that way, if, you know, God forbid something happens, you know, career-ending injury, something to the effect where, the, you know, the dream is dead, or the dream has to be readjusted. Still a backup plan, you know, and it's something where if you're working with your mind and not your body, then you're not completely compromised, because we've seen that, you know, enough. So go in with a plan. And also, and it's hard to know, especially if you're super young, but like, know what you want from it, you know? Like, if you want it, like if you want this to be all you think about every day and nothing else, and you want it to really go down the career path, like, there's things you gotta do to make that happen. You can't just look inward and think about how much you want it and what you want your wrestling. You gotta watch what others are doing. You gotta do your analytics, you know, your customer engagement. See, like, all right, well, what is your market research? What does the wrestling fan look for? What does this wrestling fan in regions look for? You know, but if you're thinking about it as a career, you have to think about it as a business yourself, as a business. So you have to do things that, you know, the Fortune 500 executives and all of their data analysts and business analysts and people like that, like, you have to do all of that. But as we see, like, it's not a dirt road anymore. A lot of people have been making brands out of themselves and finding great success with it. I mean, like, think of a guy like, so MJF is a great example of this. So I remember seeing MJF at seminars at Blitzkrieg Pro. You know, he's the first ever Limitless Wrestling World Champion. We were seeing him on a regular basis around New England's tri-state area all the time. You know, came with the Create a Pro car. But that was a guy that right away was like the total package in terms of like knew the questions to ask. And he knew that he was a brand, you know, and he asked questions from that perspective. You know, how do you make money? Well, he found the answer because he's making a whole lot of it right now. Richard Holiday, get well soon, bud, is another one that like thinks of himself as a brand. Cause you can tell from the jump, like, people that think about it that way, like, they're focused on getting a job, getting a contract, paying their bills with wrestling and only wrestling versus if it's a hobby, if it's an art, you don't have to take it to that extreme, you know, like it can still be relaxed, free and breezy and fun. And, you know, it can be fun anyways, but it's just a different lens, a different perspective. But so it's a really long-winded answer, but to sum it all up is, if you have an idea of what you want wrestling to be to you when you break into it, stick to it. Don't let anybody else tell you to think about it. Like there's people out there that'll paint it with a broad brush and say everybody has to think about it as a business, or wrestling should be fun for everybody. Because I literally see both extremes on social media on a regular basis. And we know, the truth lies in the middle. It's not black and white, it's shades of gray. So know what you want from it and have a plan. We got welders out there, you know, 3D printing experts out there, but these are people that, you know, pick up side skills. And the beautiful thing about professional wrestling is you can get into professional wrestling and pick up skills along the way too. So you can find that you really have a knack for video editing, audio production, or anything that has to do with production, and then that might light the fire and then be like, you know what, I think I'm gonna go back to school for audio production, video production, TV, something to that effect. So it works both ways, but definitely have a backup plan, especially if you're in the active wrestling realm, because you know, it only takes one foot out of place and the whole thing could come crumbling down.
Brandon Kirk always says that to you know, make sure you have a backup plan, get learn trade. Something like that.
Anything like that, like associates, trades, job corps. I mean, it's, you know, 6 months, you know, 6 months sometimes, 2 years sometimes. But like, if you think about it from the moment you graduate high school, 18 years old, and then you get that right out of the way, that takes you to 20. And then you've still got, you know, a long, long prime ahead of you. And you've got all like the credentialed boring stuff out of the way. Like the studies are out of the way. You focus on making money from wrestling and making money from, you know, the spoils of your studies.
Right. There you have it. Good Cop Pat says, thanks, Johnny. Thanks, Tiff. Great to listen to this conversation. Thank you. So awesome. Thank you. Awesome. All right. So let's talk about, I have some flyers here. Let's talk about what's coming up. A lot of great shows, you know, the three promotions that we've pretty much been talking about a lot on this podcast, between Grind, Blitzkrieg, and Limitless. So you have busy next couple of weeks, pretty much. So you don't care to share anything about those shows?
Very excited for the near future. Speaking macro first and then moving in, New England in general is going crazy. So I mean, between new promotions showing up, between tenured promotions like constantly upgrading their presentation, and then I mean, we look at it with Blitzkrieg debuting in a new venue in Westfield, Mass. I'm looking forward to that. You know, I had thought that Blitzkrieg Pro would not be back in Westfield for quite some time, and that once the Moose Lodge went under, that place was near and dear to our hearts. But found a new spot, a new home. I haven't seen it yet, but the pictures I've seen look outstanding. Ali Catch challenging Andy Brown are in his first Blitzkrieg Pro Bedlam Championship defense. Looking forward to that. We got Blake Christian coming into the house for the first time. That's the thing about Blitzkrieg. It's always going to be a party everywhere it goes. I can't wait to be on the call with that. Shout out to my homie Alyssa Marino and Gabe K. Fabian. Be holding it down live on IWTV.
Yes. Much, much love. So these will all be on IWTV. So make sure you're subscribed over there. It's only $10 a month. Can't go wrong with that. A lot of wrestling. You can watch a lot of stuff live. You can, you know, watch backlog. It's really, really amazing. So definitely check out those promotions.
I think about the, you know, like it's been a lot of, you know, a lot of reminiscing. And I think about, like, imagine having a network like that when I was 16. I would have just been up all night. And like the way I spent time then was like waiting for like old Japanese matches to download or rare matches to download. No, I could finally watch this. It's 3 a.m. That's what it would have been. But you can find all of these on IWTV, as you had said, got Grind the day before coming back with the early iteration of Overkill. Shout out to Kyle and I and Men at Work for that beautiful title. Looking forward to seeing Jay Freddy defending against Brian Keith. Limitless coming up. Man. It's just been heating up in that picture. Glad you got yourself to a Limitless live show. Got to get back. Oh, and we got to get Limitless back down to Limit Blitz. And we got to make that more than once a year.
I know. I'm so glad I made the trip. And I talk about it. I got to get Randy on this podcast because I've been dying to have a chat with him on this pod. So I got to make that happen.
Yeah, huh? he gets you on the Limitless Wrestling podcast, and he joins you on here.
I just want to sit there and talk about it because it's like, I'm so glad that, like, you know, we've been in communication, you know, all this time. And like, it was like, I was supposed to, I think, actually, was it like during the pandemic, like before the pandemic? Because I wanted to do Beyond It. I wanted to do Limitless. Mm-hmm. And then I couldn't go up. I think I started watching like a little before. I think actually now, like, I think about like the Limitless. Yeah, it was before the pandemic that John Alba kind of started telling me about it because there was a promotion that no longer exists. And that's how I wound up getting into Limitless. Then pandemic happened and I couldn't go up. So I waited. And it was just the timing because it's like over 6 hours for me to drive, you know? And I was like, okay. So I made a weekend out of it with going to Chaotic on Friday and then staying in, you know, Massachusetts and then taking the ride up. It was like an hour and a half up to Maine.
It's nice and easy.
You know? Yeah. So I was like, okay, it's not that bad. And I went back and then I stayed and then I went back to New York, you know, the next day. So I was like, this was well worth it. If anybody can get there, this is a place that you should go to. It's like Grind, like everywhere. Like, I mean, like there's so many promotions, but like when I sat in Limitless, I'm like, damn, like I felt that. I'm like, yes, I'm not at a dead promotion, you know, where there's the fans are quiet. Like, no, you need to go. Like I was, you know, like a pig in shit. Limitless and Blitzkrieg and Grind. These are just like three of some of, you know, of many amazing promotions that are out there that everybody should be following. So, but tell everybody where they could follow you so they could support you and all that fun stuff.
All things at Concept JT. I think it's at the Concept JT on Instagram. But yeah, anything Concept JT, that's the constant branding. You can follow me there. If you like hearing my commentary, Blitzkrieg, Grind, Limitless, Limitless's sister promotion, Let's Wrestle Select shows. Yeah, that's definitely where you can find me if you want to hear any of my commentary, want to hear me scream into a microphone, shriek into a microphone.
Yeah, sounds good. So go give him a follow. Those links are in the description below for an easy click for you guys. So, but Johnny, thank you so much for coming on here and chatting with me for a while. It was fun. So much to talk about. I know it's like, you know, we only like touch like a little bit, you know, there's so much to talk about, but you know, I'll be backstage of that stuff again too. So hopefully, you know, maybe we'll get Johnny to come and do one of my Indie Talks episodes at a backstage show. I haven't done anything. I've been home.
So, I gotcha.
I'll be back at something soon and backstage definitely. So I definitely want to come up to Grind and Blitz and all that fun stuff again. So, but, absolutely. Yeah, so guys, go check out those shows. Go support those promotions, all that fun stuff. Next week, Paris Vandale is going to be on, so send your questions in for her. And, yeah, so you guys know the tune. So stay safe, support independent wrestling. I'll talk to you guys soon. Have a good night.